Honorable members, I think we need to start.
Yes,
I wanted to request Lindy to follow the steps, start with the first step.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, the minister, and all stakeholders with us in this meeting. Chairperson, the steps are as follows. We'll confirm the members present to determine whether we are a quorum. We will also record apologies and go straight to the presentation as follows by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, as well as from the Department, all their legal opinions, and that would be the agenda change to adopt the agenda, the third item.
Which item are we in now?
We are on acknowledging, confirming members present in this meeting so that we can determine whether we're a quorum or not.
So do we correct?
Yes, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson. I would like to confirm the following members that are in this meeting today. We have you, Chairperson, Member Kungubele. We have Member Abrahams. We have Member Stock. We have Member Opperman. We have Member Mutaung. We have Member Pilangulu. We have Member Ayres. We have Member Priet. We have Member Manganyi. I wish to confirm that we are a quorum. The decision can, the committee can take decisions on this meeting because we correct.
Thank you very much. Next item.
Chairperson, I would like to record the following apologies. I've received an apology from the Deputy Minister who indicated that she won't be with us today due to prior commitments. Member Sukers also indicated that she will join the meeting later. And Member Afana Merve, she is on her way to Durban. I think she will land after 10, but she'll join the meeting a bit, few minutes late. So those are the three apologies and the standing apology from Member Ngwenya is sick. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next item.
Chair, the next item is the adoption of the agenda. Can I flight the agenda for members to, adopt?
Yes, let's go.
After accepting the apologies, adopting the apologies.
Thank you very much. Can I table the apologies, members?
Apology adopted.
Thank you very much. Next, any seconder?
Chairperson, it's Alexandra. I second, and please note that Member Masango is struggling to log in. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Member Masango is struggling to log in. Okay. Next item.
Chair, is the adoption of the agenda, Chair. I've just flighted the agenda for members' consideration.
Honourable members, the agenda.
Yes, Chair.
Yes.
I just want, before I move, I wanted to suggest that because the issue of the post office and SASA were the one that were been, why I propose that in the agenda, we must start with the post office and the SASA issues. I'm just suggesting that we must start with.
I request, Honorable Manganyi, I will request for indulgence. The reason we are starting with the legal opinion, it is a matter which is more complex. I propose that we keep the agenda as it is, unless you've got a real fundamental reason why. I'm calling for your indulgence.
Chairperson, can you please let me, my hand is up.
Honorable Stock.
Yeah, no, I think I'm also of the view, looking at the agenda and the issues that are before us, the issue of SAPO, SASA, it has been coming for quite some time now. And then if you look at, the update to address the challenges of TDG, it's a follow-up. And the issue of the legal opinion is also quite important, but it's a follow-up from the previous meeting. So I wanted to support Honorable Manganye that we deal with SAPO and SASA as the first item, and then we deal with the other issues after that. Thank you very much.
Can I raise this, Honorable Members? Yes. The post office people are here. Am I right?
Yes, I think so. I think so, Honorable Chair.
Lindua?
Jefferson?
Are SAPO people here?
I think so, Chair.
Hello?
Jefferson?
Yes?
It's Minister Zulu speaking. I raised my hand also.
Yes, Makeba, my apology.
Yes. Chairperson, of course, I see meeting here to Latina as the minister.
You can make proposals, Makeb.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I want to make a proposal, but making the statement that we should not be the ones that make decisions for the committee. But my proposal, Chair, would have been that, in fact, I did send you a message. I'm sure you didn't see it. I sent a message earlier saying, maybe we should deal with, we can't have the SAPO people in our meeting throughout the meeting, yes. But I thought what we could do is deal with this one, the legal opinion, tell the SAPO people and others to wait for us to finish this, and then sibabize when we are ready, when we are done with this one. And the reason why I'm also saying that is because I would like us, with these issues of the legal opinion and so, to enable the department and the legal team, if there are things that are coming out of here that need to be done quite urgently, we can enable them to do so. That would have been my proposal. That was my proposal in the SMS I sent to you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Well, Honorable Makeba is just an outsider assisting, but can I hear what the committee members are saying? Because Honorable Manganye said we start with the post office, seconded by Honorable Stock, and the chairperson is alone.
You're not alone, chairperson, I'm with you.
No, it seems as if it's the minister, they want us to start with the post office. This is not my meeting. There's nothing. Honorable Masango?
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to say that if the post office can wait in the waiting room for us, I would support what the minister has suggested.
Yes. Yeah. Let me go back to the proposals of the post office and check if they are not, we'll have to abide by what they are proposing. Honorable Manganye?
I was just saying Honorable Masango must propose, must not second, must propose if we've got the different issue. Then he will hear from me if I'm withdrawing what I have proposed.
Propose, Honorable Masang.
I would like to propose, Chairperson, that we start with the legal opinion and ask very humbly for the post office to wait in the waiting room, and then we deal with the post office matter at a later stage. Thank you, Chair.
Do we have a second for that proposal?
I second that proposal, Chair, Alexandra Abrams.
Thank you. Can we request Honorable Manganye? If not, there's nothing we can do. We are in your hands.
Honorable Chair, if we shift that one as Honorable Masango have proposed, I will agree then after dealing with the issue of presentation of legal whatever in discussion, then we must go to the post office door.
Thank you, comrades. Thank you, honorable members. I'm sure even Northern Cape agrees now.
No, I'm agreeing, Chair. Let's proceed.
Okay,
thank you.
All right. Honorable members, I wanted to propose that we follow a particular order. What order did you propose, Lindwe?
Chair?
Yes?
Sir, we propose that, am I audible?
Yes, you're audible.
Okay, sorry. Chair, agenda proposed that we start with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, followed by the Legal Advisor of Parliament, and then we get the last one from the department. So that will be a format of following this legal opinion, Chair.
State Law Advisor, how many minutes do you want? 2, 3, 4 minutes?
Morning, Chair. I will be quick. I will try my best to be quick. And
okay. Let me... All right.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Yes, Chairperson, it's me, Minister. I'm not exactly sure why we're starting with the State Law Advisor, because I would have thought that the department, having been given a responsibility which was very specific, the department should be able to say, putting the facts, because remember there were also facts that were disputed. I would have expected that the department lead us in giving the guidance, the full picture of what happened and how it happened and how we got to where we are now. And then we get to the gist of the issues, because the State Law Advisor is not going to deal with the issues of SALGA and the challenges that were there thereof.
No, we want all the legal opinion ministers to be presented.
I agree with you, Chair, but I'm saying the department should have started giving us the background and then enabled the legal advice.
It's okay. I don't think I've got big issues with that. So, Chiz, are you ready?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Kautsho, check it out.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members. Good morning. We were given an assignment when we last met on Wednesday to respond to some specific legal questions that were asked. So the legal opinion that was sought was on the process that was followed by the Department of Social Development before the introduction of the amendment bill, the Children's Amendment Bill to Parliament. The facts to this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the department initiated the process of amending the Children's Amendment Act since 2011, immediately after the Act came into force. And this was the result of some certain identified implementation challenges. During the process of developing the Children's Amendment Bill, there was a court challenge launched by the Center for Child Law, resulting to an order directing the Minister of Social Development to amend the legislation in order to come up with a comprehensive legal solution. The Act, that is the Children's Act, is an intersectoral legislation in nature and has implementation obligations on a multiplicity of functionaries from different organs of state in almost all spheres of government. On such basis, the department established a national child care protection forum to serve as a platform for coordination and consultation with all the relevant stakeholders on matters relating to the care and protection of children, including the development of legislation. This is in line with the provisions of sections 4 and 5 of the Children's Act, read together with section 41 of the Constitution, the intergovernmental relations provision. The Children's Amendment Bill was consulted in that regard with the members of the National Child Care Protection Forum and other stakeholders in all the spheres of government as per the records available in the department. The bill, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Honorable Minister, the bill was later published for public comments in 2018, October, inviting members of the public to provide comments to the bill. An annex has been attached to that, to the opinion that was sent to your Honorable Committee, Honorable Chairperson, as Annex A.
When was that?
It was this morning, Honorable Chair.
No, but this thing has just come in this morning.
Yes, Honorable Chair. That is
so they came this morning?
Yes, yes, they were
okay.
Sent.
Okay, all right, proceed.
Honorable Chair, the bill was again published in the Gazette in February 2019, inviting members to take note of the intention to introduce the bill to Parliament. And that notice is also attached to the opinion sent to your office as Honorable, to your committee as Annex B. Due to the change of administration during 2019, the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor advised that the bill could not be introduced to Parliament as the new cabinet had to be appraised of the matters outstanding from the previous cabinet, which advice we welcome. Thus, the department had to resubmit the bill to the cabinet of the sixth administration in order to reapprove the bill for introduction to Parliament. So this was done notwithstanding that the Fifth Parliament intimated that this piece of legislation should not lapse but must be continued in the Sixth Administration. It was done in like that nevertheless. In June 2020, the Cabinet of the Sixth Administration reapproved the bill that it be introduced to Parliament. The bill was published for the second time for introduction to Parliament in August 2020, and that is indicated in Annex C, which has also been sent to your committee together with the opinion. So the bill was finally processed by the committee, and the department was given an opportunity in October 2020 to analyze the clauses of the bill, and Parliament published the bill inviting comments from members of the public. It is reported that SALGA responded to the publication and presented to Portfolio Committee during February 2021. SALGA assessed that it was never consulted during the development of the bill and that the bill was never published for public comments before introduction to Parliament, but nevertheless made comments on the version published by Parliament. The legal question that is before us, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members, is that in fact it is a quadrilateral of some sort. It is based on the fact that we need to first understand whether the Children's Amendment Bill was ever published for public comments before it was introduced to Parliament. And we also need to understand whether the department is obliged in terms of the constitution to consult SALGA as a party during the development of legislation that affects municipalities. And the third issue is whether SALGA was consulted by the department. And the fourth and final issue is whether the change in the wording of the bill published for public comments because of incorporation of public comments received from the members of the public necessitates the republication of the bill consent. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, when we looked at this issue in order to respond to these four legal questions that we are trying to address, we indicate that yes, the publication of the bill first on of the Children's Amendment Bill in the Gazette. This bill was published on 29 October 2018 as the Children's Amendment Bill in the Government Gazette number 42005 and as notice W185, notice which has been attached, which serves as a proof of such publication as in Section 1542 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, which provides as follows. Draft national or provincial legislation that affects the status, institutions, powers, or functions of local government must be published for public comment before it is introduced in Parliament. So the emphasis here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that it must be published for public comment before it is introduced in Parliament. Annex A responds to that this was done. And what this provision is also saying, it must be published in a manner that allows local government, municipalities, and other interested parties an opportunity to make representations. In other words, the publication of the bill is a process that allows municipalities and other interested persons to make representations. This is in compliance of Section 154. Before Honorable Chair, the 29th of October 2018, there was never an introduction of the Children's Amendment Bill 2018 in Parliament. In other words, it is not correct to state that the Children's Amendment Bill was introduced into Parliament without having been published for public comment, as contemplated in Section 1542 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The department therefore complied, Honorable Chair, with Section 1542 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa in this regard. The second issue to deal with, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Honorable Minister, is the consultation with SALGA. There are basically three ways in which SALGA could have been consulted in this regard, as per our legal understanding. The first instance is enshrined in Section 41 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, read with Section 5 of the Children's Act. And the second is SALGA could be consulted in terms of Section 154 that has been alluded to in paragraph 5.1 above, because that particular section in the Constitution is speaking directly to municipalities in the chapter that deals with municipalities. And thirdly, SALGA could have been consulted in terms of the National Intergovernmental Forum established in terms of Section 9 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. It is therefore necessary to have a careful examination of all of these possible scenarios and draw our own conclusion as the department from them. The first one with regard to the section, that is to Section 41 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, subsection 1, paragraph H in particular. The spheres of government and all organs of state within sphere must cooperate with one another in mutual trust and good faith. That is informing one another, that is my emphasis, and consulting with one another on matters of common interest, coordinating their actions and legislation with one another, and adhering to agreed procedures, which is my main emphasis here, adherence to agreed procedures. What this procedure entails, this procedure is in line with what Section 5 of the Children's Act provides for. Section 5 of the Children's Act provides that in order to achieve the implementation of the Children's Act in the manner referred to in Section 4, all of the state organs in the national, provincial, and local sphere where applicable must ensure the protection and well-being of children and must cooperate with the development of a uniform approach aimed at coordinating and integrating the services delivered to them. What this particular provision is saying, it recognizes the intersectoral nature of the work of protecting children in the Children's Act. And then there were agreements that were entered into. They may have been in writing, they may have been verbal, but there has been correspondence from the department which aimed at the end resulted to the establishment of the National Child Care Protection Forum, which we understand to be an extension of the National Intergovernmental Relations Forum contemplated in the National Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. It is the department's view, therefore, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that Section 5 of the Children's Act was crafted with the understanding of the existence of the intergovernmental relations that need to be maintained, and in recognition that there is a need for various role players in different spheres of government to implement the Children's Act. The department therefore established that forum where role players would coordinate, integrate, and deliver services to children. Honorable Chair, we must understand that the NCCPF, which is the National Child Care Protection Forum, serves as a platform for consultation during the development of legislation. The conclusion that can be drawn from this particular instance, that is Section 41 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, and also the Children's Act, Section 5, read together, is that the NCCPF has representatives from all state organs and organized civil society, not undermining the fact that we understand the seniority of SALGA in this regard, but just indicating that stakeholders are in that. We understand that there was an issue that SALGA is not involved SALGA is not involved in the NCCPF, and we understand that as a dispute of fact rather than a dispute of law. Secondly, Honorable Chair, as has been alluded earlier, I well understand that maybe, I don't know how much time, Honorable Chair, that you can give.
Okay. The way forward.
And then we can go to the way forward and say, we
taking as too long, just go to the way forward, please.
Okay, okay, thanks, Minister. What we can say as a department is that we did comply with the legislative process in terms of how the legislation has to be processed and brought before Parliament. And what we are suggesting now as a department, as a way forward, is that the parts that are contested, that are in dispute in the Children's Amendment Bill, can be taken off from the Children's Amendment Bill and be published separately as a second amendment, so that we don't stall the process of developing this Children's Amendment Bill, as it also entails a court order in it. So that is the way forward that we are proposing, Honorable Chair, that legal services from Parliament we have consulted. And they are of the view that that approach would be correct. And we also need to engage SALGA in that regard. So that is the way forward, Honorable Chair, that in the spirit of intergovernmental relations that we must always maintain as the prosecution, the bill must be split, and the contested parts, which is 103 capital A to capital N, be published separately, and we continue with the process. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members.
Chair, if I may just ask Advocate Zaza just to indicate as part of the way forward. Advocate, what's the name of Zaza?
Is it Zaza?
Yes.
Yes, it's Zaza, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, I thought you were saying Mr. Chair's second name is Zaza.
Oh. No. No,
it's
okay.
Well, I
changed
that.
Okay,
all right.
Yeah, just to add on what Mchochi said earlier on, Chair. We anticipate, rather, we are arranging to have proposing rather to have a legal technical team that is going to consist of DFD legal, parliamentary legal, the Office of the Chief of State Advisors, and SALGA. Also, I'm also going to include TPE as well because of the ECD migration, it will be taking place as soon. So basically, the team that we are proposing is going to look at the contested clauses, and then that's going to come up with the way forward and advise how are we going to deal with this matter going forward. This is also what I was going to add, rather chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yes, Chair. In light of what the department has presented, do you still require me to go through the entire?
I think you should. You shouldn't. I think you shouldn't. Probably, it applies also to Mjenglan. Am I right, Mjenglan?
Yes, you are indeed, Chairperson.
Because having read all your versions, I may be worried about some things that Mchochisa said, but they are not essential.
Agreed.
The most important thing is that the early child education thing, we agree that it be expunged. Is that expansion? Is that the right word?
Rejected, yeah.
Yes?
Removed.
The language of the rule, Shepherdson, is reject.
Reject.
Yes, Chair. Reject all the rules of National Assembly. So we reject it. And then that translates in its removal. Am I correct, Mtenan?
Yes, Chairperson, you are correct. Thank you.
Okay. You will couch it for us, guys, in a manner that makes sense, because what therefore, honorable members, seems to be agreed is that the problematic clause, in particular the early child education, which the state law advisor would have actually categorically said, it did not go via the cabinet, which is no longer the matter now we are involved in. Even if the way. The fact that there is dispute about these issues hangs a shadow over the processing of this bill. And our desperation is that the foster care legal solution should not be delayed by anything. I'm tabling this way forward before you remember that the disputed clause, which is in particular, can somebody amongst you, Chochisa, are you able to, for the purpose of this meeting, explain the disputed clauses? I don't want them to come from me.
You can talk to
me. Honorable Chair, thank you. The disputed clauses relate to the registration of early childhood development centers. The current scenario in the legislation talks to the registration of early childhood development programs. And we simply added a word, centers, where we said there must be a difference between registering an early childhood development program from an early childhood development center as a facility. So that is the disputed area. And then there has been an insertion in amendment of clause, that is clause 57, in amendment of section 153 of the Act, which is then 103 capital A to 103 capital N. It is simply an administrative registration procedure that says
No. Wait, I know you are sneaking something now.
Oh, my apologies.
No, don't sneak. I think the early child education, I just want to call it the early child education, to minimize controversy. I don't want to say particular, because I can say department wants to say the particular aspect. Remember, the problem we have here, which I want Mchochisa and your team to comment, the legal state advice, the state law advisor institution are saying, to their knowledge, the migration of the early child education development, whatever program, as pronounced at a, to the instance that as an instance of pronouncement by the president in 2019 is as a result of that, there is a proclamation that is being developed between the two departments. Is that correct, Mr. Jis?
Correct, Honorable Sir.
Don't you think it is proper to deal with, whatever you guys discuss, take that into account, because ultimately, the essence of this thing is not going to be with you, it's going to be with the TPE. Am I right?
Correct, Honorable Sir.
Yes. So I want to say, I don't want to choose particular aspects. Is that the early child development education for staff? So that we are okay. Mjengan, is that fine?
Yes, sir, I confirm it is fine. Thank you.
Yes, Lisa? Has it disconnected?
Okay,
You confirm, Lisa? I can't hear you, Lisa.
I agreed with the processes.
Thank you very much, because the principal...
Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes? I can hear you. Yes, I can.
With the process.
No, thank you very much. Actually, the principal agreement must come from your office, Lisa. The principal agreement. Because at the end of the day, the ultimate accountability is going to be in your office. Thank you very much. I think in that approach...
Sorry, Chair, it's Bridget Masang.
Yes, Honorable Masang.
Thank you, Chair. Are we now getting out of this holding altogether? I just wanted I didn't hear the sections, the actual sections that we were saying are rejected. Like I was trying to record them, but
I think it's not too, can one of the lawyers refer specifically, Mr. Chisa?
The amendment, Honorable Chair, of Chapter 5 and insertions of 103 capital A, that is amendment of Chapter 6, yes, insertions of sections 103 capital A up to 103 capital N.
That is the issue, Mjengane, no?
Yes, Chair, that's where there is reference to early childhood development, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you okay, Enoch Masang?
I am okay, Chair, although I thought that there were about three chapters on ECD in the amendment bill. So if the advocates are saying that's all, then I will take that.
We are trying to deal with those which are contested, which poses a potential defect in the process.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Then you guys, technical people, you know how we have ended. Honorable members, are we together on this matter? We're absolutely together. Comrade Padiba. Because I feel at ease now, and I must thank Honorable Minister for your indulgence on this matter, because we don't want towing and throwing on this bill again at all. So if I'm correct now, Lindiwe, the process and the time frames are safe after this. Lindiwe?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you.
We will be able to meet the set deadlines.
Thank you very much. That's the most important thing to me. Mageba?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. May I thank you for the indulgence, and I indicate that the reason why I wanted the department to be the one to start this way is because I didn't want us to go all the way only to come to this point and then we get all mixed up. I think now it's very clear, and for me what is important is to keeping to the deadlines, ensuring that at no point must we be found in contempt of court. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. My closing remarks, honorable members, and include the department and everybody, especially Mr. Chisa, but I can see the way you have couched your opinion, we think alike on that, but we have moved. Uchochisa and Sasa, that if you read chapter 3 of the Constitution in its entirety, of course, including
154.
The Constitution enjoins a proactive relationship, a collaborative relationship, a positive conduct that ensures that we optimize this relationship. We are not dealing with it as a mere compliance. Do you agree with that, Mr. Chair?
Correct, Honorable Chair.
Yes. It's not just, we're not just ticking a box. Constitution directs us that this relationship must be proactively and positively optimized so that the best out of it can be produced. That's the closing, that's my parting shot on this. So that in future, each sphere, when it's doing anything, it must be its primary value. How is it going to affect, not the other sphere coming to say, lesbians are here and they affect. All the spheres must take a proactive and adopt a positive behavior for optimizing this relationship to the best of the people of this country. Thank you very much. Next item, Lindwe.
Thank you very much, Chair. The next item and agenda will receive a presentation from the department. Let me double check.
Is that not the post office?
I'll double check the agenda, Chair.
There was a proposal that after this we go straight to the support.
Let's go to the around, Chair. Start with the post.
Yes, let's do that. That was the arrangement. Let's go straight to that support department presentation action plan.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Makeba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I actually do not even want to be making inputs because this is a continuation. We just want to get the report from them as had been requested of them. So I don't want to make any statement at the moment, but that the Minister Stelanda Ben-Abraham should also be in the meeting. I shouldn't take it for granted that she might have not wanted to make any statement.
Is she here?
Let's hear from here.
Is the Minister here? Minister Telecommunication? Is the Minister from Telecommunication here?
The Minister from Communications and Digital.
From Communication.
In my, we had agreed we're both going to be here. So, let them come later. I did speak to her earlier on and I did indicate to her that we're starting with another item and then they'll be informed to come in.
My worry is that, Minister, if that is the case, can we quickly go to the departmental presentation while they are sensitized that we are coming close to that? I'm worried of us dealing with this item when the key people are not here.
Okay.
Can we go to the department instead of this so that they are mobilized? The department's presentation will not take long as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, Chair. That being the case, I will just hand over to the department.
Thank you, Madam. ADJ?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to yourself, the Minister and the Ministers, the Deputy Ministers. I think actually we may have one Deputy Minister in, and of course the Honorable Members. I will flight the presentation which we are sharing. This is a joint presentation that we did together with the Department of Communications and Telecommunications, including the agencies SAPO, Postbank, as well as the Department of Social Development and SASA.
Wait a bit, DJ. I want to be on the same page. We've got two types of presentation. Can you explain, Lindiwe?
Yes.
Lindiwe?
Yes, Chair. Two presentation. One is the integrated presentation for SASA SAPO, I think the other one is for the updated action plan, which was requested by the committee in our previous meeting.
You are presenting that one, the ADG.
The joint one.
I'm presenting, yes, the joint one on the matters pertaining to both SAPO and the post office.
No, I want us to clear. That's why I thought I need to intervene. If I understood the joint one, we said let's take it down a bit until the minister, if she's available, is around. What we are requesting that the department present now is the action plan on choose that we requested, unless you're saying all of them are integrated.
No. I hear you, Chair. We will deal with an update on the temporary disability grants.
Deal with that one, and then after that, the joint SAPO comes in.
Okay, I also think that I won't say much on this one. Safe to say that we've made tremendous progress in terms of the plan that we've previously presented to the committee. This is indeed a follow-through on that, and I will then give over to Sasa, the CEO, and I think Diane, who will go through the presentation. We will deal with just the elements that deal with impact, with progress that we've recorded. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm now flighting the presentation.
Okay.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Chair. In order not to take too much time, I will just ask Diane to go straight into talking to just giving the feedback in terms of where we are with this particular project. Thank you very much, Chair. Diane?
Thank you, ma'am. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister, honorable members. We're going to run through, and I won't run through all the slides. Some of it really is just providing the context which the members are aware of. So if we can move, DG, we'll go. This slide, if we can just go back the one. All we wanted to do was just to give members a picture of where we are currently and some of the progress that has been made from the last time we presented to the committee in terms particularly on the contracted doctors. You will see that where there was a challenge in the Western Cape, particularly that had 9 doctors, they're now sitting at 18 doctors directly contracted by SASA and then working with the doctors from the Department of Health. And we will go through in a little bit more detail. We then wanted to give the committee an update on the 10-point plan that we had presented earlier, and members and chairperson, we have provided the service standards that we should be measured against as a response to the guidance that was given by the committee. Mm-hmm. First point on our 10-point plan was to look at the issues of improved queue management, and inherent in these as well is the dignity issues related to how we treat clients when they're waiting in queues and so on. The standards are there for the members. I'm not going to go through those in detail. We certainly can respond to questions if there are any. But in terms of the progress made on the improved queue management, we do have staff on rotation that are utilized in the service points where it's possible. They do help us maintain the queues, maintain the social distancing. They also assist us with the making sure that everybody in the queues keeps their masks on. We have procured additional chairs, and there are chairs now that are placed outside for clients to sit on. It also helps us maintain the social distancing so that the chairs keep people apart. Access to water and toilets is available for the clients. The second point is around the applicants to be provided with appointments, and again have set the standards where once the client gets in to be dealt with by a SASA staff member, it shouldn't take longer than 15 minutes for that booking to be completed. Where we are in terms of progress, we're still dealing with the manual bookings. And in terms of the numbers, which we will see later, we are confident that we will be concluded by the 31st of March with very small numbers that should be left, if any, after the 31st of March. We've also done a lot of work on the development of a automated booking system, which may not be ready to help us right now, but it certainly will be a system that we will put in place for the permanent use of bookings for disability grant applications going forward. The next issue on the 10-point plan was to look at securing additional venues particularly to cope with the disability grant applications. Obviously, these would be continued for the other grants as we move forward. What we have done in the Western Cape, which was the biggest problem because they only have 16 local offices, they have managed to secure an additional 11 service points from the Metro, which have been made available. Four of those are already operational. The other seven are being dealt with in terms of making sure that they are OSH compliant so that they comply with the health and safety protocols, also that we comply with COVID protocols, and that we then use the staff who are not on actually based in the local offices who are on rotation to be able to man those service points. Western Cape also has been looking at service points in the more rural areas, particularly around George Knysna area, which have been challenges, and there is progress being made there. Free State currently use 111 assessment sites, and they're also using one of the mobile offices. The other provinces have not been as successful in getting additional service points, and this is largely still because of the restrictions around the COVID protocols, but it is something that we continue pursuing. The approval of overtime, and since the last time we were at the committee, the approval for overtime for staff has been finalized. It is approved. On the disability days, the staff are on duty at our local offices from 6 in the morning till 6 at night. We also have the offices that are open on Saturday mornings from 8 until 1 for appointments that are made during the week for specific staff. These are only for the disability clients at this stage. Thanks, DG. Then the other point that we had on our plan was to negotiate with the Provincial Department of Health to assist with the doctors, and we do have the standards there. What we have already implemented in the Western Cape, particularly that had the challenge, we have already done orientation for 124 doctors that have been provided by the Department of Health, the Provincial Department of Health and the Metro Health. Particularly, these have been oriented and they've already started with the file-based assessments. What they do there is because they're based in the health facilities, they're able to do the assessments off the health facility file. The client doesn't have to go in at all, and they then make those assessments available to SASSA and we can continue with the application process. They've started with the assessments and we should therefore see the numbers going up significantly. Each of these doctors can do 50 assessments in a single session, and that means we can do 6,200 in a single day for the session that the doctor is able to give us. Where they don't have sufficient information, they then do telephonic interviews with the clients to make sure that they are able to give us complete assessments. In Gauteng, they've also started with that. And then just the other point on this is with the social relief, which was the other point we had on our 10-point plan, to say that this is already happening. Applications are being processed. We've already processed a total of 7,912 applications, and the social relief has been issued. Thanks, DG. Then, and I've spoken a little bit about it, securing the additional contracted doctors. We have had success in the Western Cape with at least 8 additional doctors contracted. They've actually signed. They are finalizing the paperwork with 2 more that everything is just about complete, and then are still looking at additional doctors that had expressed interest, particularly for the rural areas. In Northern Cape, they've got 28 contracted doctors. And then in all provinces, in addition to the contracted doctors we have help, doctors from the Department of Health that are assisting us to varying degrees, depending on the pressures within the health facilities in those provinces. The identification of the hotspot areas for the placement of additional doctors, here particularly in the Metro, which has the significant pressure of applications or reapplications for the temporary disability grant, the file-based assessment process, which has been initiated, would certainly help relieve that. Because of the success of this, we are looking to roll it out to all the other provinces, starting with Gauteng, which has got the pressure of numbers as well. But this certainly would be something that we would look at going forward as a permanent feature within our assessment milieu that we give for the disability grants. Thanks, DG. The next one was around the regular updating of our electronic medical assessment tool that we have. We use this in all of the province. This system helps us to track the bookings, the applications, and the assessments that are done. It also helps us track the no-shows. And it's really concerning.
I don't see the screen, Lindy. Am I the only one who don't see the screen?
Chair, we think you're the only one
who
can see.
Maybe there's a problem.
There's a small one.
Yes?
If the screen is here, it's visible, Chair. There are two. There's a big presentation and a small slide.
I think I don't see it. Proceed.
And you're in the corner.
Anyway, the presentation is there. I have it. It's all right.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I was just saying one of the challenges that we're picking up is that clients who are booked for assessments and have the dates confirmed then don't honour those assessments, which does have an impact on our ability to get through the numbers. It is something we are dealing with. In the last issue on the 10-point plan that we had presented is that despite the focus on the temporary disability grants, we would continue with maintaining the separate days for the other grant types. And improving communication with all the stakeholders. This is to make sure that people who want to apply for the other grant types are not, you know, are not crowded out. And we have implemented that. There are specific days at local offices for the different grant types. And we, while we're attending to the disability grants, we also are continuing on with the online application rollout, the full rollout of that for the current grant types, which are old age, foster child and child support will be available from April, and we would then look at how we bring in the other grant types onto the online application platform as well. We have had communication with all national stakeholders who deal with persons with disabilities, and in fact this morning we're actually addressing a webinar with the South African Disability Alliance just to get them information on disability grants, who qualifies, how to apply, what to do if the application is rejected and so on. So we really are trying to strengthen our communication with the stakeholders. Thanks, DG. If we can move on and the next slide, this just gives a progress as at the 2nd of March of where we are with the disabilities against our target number of 197,000. Already 128,809 people have been booked, of which 85,000 have already done the assessments, which have resulted in 75,000 applications. There will be a question, I'm sure, around why there is such a discrepancy between the numbers booked, assessed, and applied. And the reason for that is that we've really focused on making sure that everybody gets a booking right up front, because this is a prerequisite to the application. Once the bookings have been done and the assessments are received, we're then able to do the application. Now that the majority have in fact been booked, we would be moving very swiftly onto the applications. We've also implemented a process where our staff are available at the assessment sites so that as soon as the assessment is done, we're able to do the application so as to narrow that gap. Thank you, DG. The following honourable members are just graphs that show the progress that has been made week on week in the temporary disability grants. You're getting a national picture first, and then there are graphs that show it per province where you're seeing the progress being made with between bookings, assessments, and applications. We can move, DG. That's the provincial view of what I've just spoken about. We can continue. Then following up from the last engagement, we just wanted to give an update on the customer contact center, because that was also one of the concerns. We know that the challenge that we're trying to address is that our contact center has been less than effective. We historically have been able to pick up less than 30% of the calls, which is really not acceptable. We also have not responded to the email and written inquiries within the standard times that we have set for ourselves. The contact center has been affected by the fact that staff have been working on rotation, and that although we put in remote working arrangements, they were certainly challenged by network and connectivity issues. But all these matters are being addressed, as we'll see when we look at the progress slides. Thanks, DJ. This is just the interim solution. We have the outsourced service provider who is with us for 6 months who would certainly help us. They provide additional capacity. They are focusing on the 350 relief grant. However, their capacity is also used for the call center as a fallover when the national call center is inundated. People can also choose to go directly through to get responses on the 350 relief grant through an interactive voice recognition system. And then they are dealing with the backlog of the emails in the system. And then we have the regional help desks. And at the last meeting, we were asked to provide the numbers. They're now included on the slide. I just really want to stress that these are not call centers. They're not regional call centers. They are regional help desk centers that are manned by SASA staff. So their capacity is limited, but we do want to at least provide some solution to be able to respond to clients who do phone in. Thank you, DG. If we move on to the long-term solution, and this is medium to long-term, I don't want long-term being 5 years down the line, but we really are learning from our current outsource partner that is a specialist in this field. It is their job to manage call centers on behalf of people. So we're able to learn lessons, and through that, we will inform the modernization of our call center. We've already got a procurement process underway, which would look at upgrading the current call center technology. This is expected to be completed within the first quarter of 2021-22, so that it would already start supporting the changes that we're wanting to bring in there. However, we're also looking at how we strengthen the self-help options for our clients, which limits the need for personal contact. And this is done through the use of chatbots with automated responses on frequently asked questions. And these should be in place before the end of March on the current call center environment. Then we are looking at a medium-term project, which is the business process reorganization within the organization, which would consider people, processes, and technology alignment to make sure that the contact center is able to deliver as it is supposed to. Then just if we can move on and look at the progress around the call center responsiveness. As I've said, we've got the standard set out. The capacity, as I've said, has been strengthened by the additional 300 call center agents as a result of the contract. That outsourced call center has managed to deal with 221,000 calls already over a 30-day period, and they have 343,000 backlogged emails to deal with. They've already dealt with 72,500. They're able to finalize 3,300 a day, although we're really looking at how we can push that up so that we can reduce and deal with the backlog of emails a lot quicker than it would be indicated. Our in-house call center and the regional help desk have attended to 26,000 in January and 23,000 calls in February, the majority of which were simple inquiries and were able to be closed straight away. Thank you, DG. The following slide is really just an indication of what I've said around the calls that the outsourced service provider is helping us with. It gives an indication of the language fit of those calls, as well as the major reasons for people calling into the call center. At this stage, it is still around applications. This is not only applications for the 350 grant, but applications for grants and then the declined grant at 21%. But we are really making progress in terms of being able to respond to the clients. The following slides, DG, just indicate the in-house call center. You'll see the majority of the calls are still coming into head office, but that the regions do also respond to the calls that they pick up on their help desks. And then the last slide, Honorable Chairperson and members, is around our website, where one of the challenges was that it was not the easiest website to navigate. What we have done in terms of progress to date is that we have, on the landing page of the website, created a special visible tab for the grant forms. It is labeled Grant Forms tab, and under that tab are the DG referral forms, so people are able to access them themselves. There are also the reconsideration forms, so if anybody's application is declined or it is again given for a temporary period where they think it should be a permanent grant, they're able to go to the website and request the reconsideration straight away. The email addresses for the submission of those reconsiderations are also on the website so that the clients can submit directly through email without having to go back to the office to do the reconsideration. And then the appeal forms, which is the next step if the reconsideration is not successful, is for clients to then log an appeal, and that appeal is dealt with by the independent tribunal, which sits in social development, and those appeal forms also would be available on the website for people to help themselves when they get the outcome of the reconsideration. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, that is the update on the temporary disability grant progress, and we're really requesting the Portfolio Committee to note that update. Thank you so much, Chair.
Now, I want to make a proposal, Honourable Members, so that we are good hosts. Can we hold discussions on this one and go, because I'm told the minister is, and go to the joint one, we discuss that one and we come back to this one. Is that okay? I want us to be the good hosts.
That is okay, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the post office, Sapo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So we will do this presentation. We will start as DSD and SASA with the first seven slides, or eight slides, and then our colleagues from the Department of Communications and Digital Technology at the Post Office and Post Bank will then come in thereafter. I'm going to slide the presentation. I just wanted to say that this is a very important agenda item that is being discussed, and we are working very hard together with the Department of Communications and Digital Technology, including the agencies. Chair?
I think I've done something that is not acceptable. Can I welcome the Department of Communication formally to this meeting? And can we do the introduction? We are very much honored, especially with the minister herself being here. And I think we nearly did something very bad. Let's welcome the Department of Communication. Let's do the quick introduction. Minister?
Thank you, Comrade, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to all colleagues in the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members, and our officials from the two departments, the Department of Social Development and Department of Communications and Digital Technologies. Chairperson, I believe we have the Acting Director General, Ms. Nongubela Yordan Dani, who's the Acting Director General, as I said, and from the department. And we'll definitely have the team from SAPO, as led by the chairperson of SAPO, and of course, administratively, the Acting CEO, Ms. Renee Lwelanga. Then they'll be supported by other people that are joining us. And we are here, of course, at the center in Suki, Ms. Suki Nzigeni, who's also part of the delegation from SAPO. So, person, firstly, let me take this opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee for extending a hand to us in order to share the work that we do on behalf of the Department of Social Development as resolved by the Court, the Governing Party, and Cabinet. So, person, as you are aware, this has not been an easy journey, but of course, at the center of it is the importance of the collaboration by the parties that are involved. And I want to report up front that so far we've been working so well ourselves with the ministerial level and the departments and the entities that are involved. This, Chairperson, we do it in order to remind ourselves of the position that we find ourselves in, the route that we have taken, and why are we here today. But most importantly, to say, where do we want to see the work that you are doing taking South Africans to? And this is a joint effort, as I said, that requires us at all times, even when we disagree, to be tolerant and patient with each other. Instead, try to persuade each other where we believe is for the betterment of our people's lives. We therefore take comfort in the fact that from your side as Parliament, because in the work that we do in the administration at times, it requires certain things besides just accountability. It requires us at times to have a relook and a review of certain decisions in relation to the regulation and the legislation of the environment that we find ourselves in. Chairperson, I would like, with your permission, to then invite the ADG to then talk briefly on the work, as the presentations will be done jointly from SASA and our SASA. When I say SASA, it's SASA and SAPO, but the departments are there, then the Director General will then guide us based on your permission. Once more, Chairperson, thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Before that, Mageba.
Chairperson, I think I'm fine. I welcome my counterpart minister, and I think we should just go ahead. I don't want to make any statement at the moment.
Thank you very much. Whoever start the presentation, let's move. Thank you, Honorable Minister Ndabeni. Thank you, Makeba. As I said the other day, and I'm staying saying now, this journey we are on, it will be one of the biggest Christmas parties to our people in South Africa if we can just secure them their dignity. These objectives, if they can be realized, it will be the best Christmas for our people. Can whoever is supposed to lead the presentation start?
Thank you very much, Chair. And indeed, this has been an issue that the committee has been raising for a while in terms of ensuring that we bring dignity to our clients. And of course, for them to have trust and confidence in the system of paying grants. And of course, the issue of queues is one of the critical issues. And we have, and of course, it's also been flagged as a potential super spreader, especially now with COVID-19. What we have done, we've continued to work very closely with our colleagues at the Department of Communications and Digital Technology, and of course, all our agencies, through a joint expo which the ministers have set up. And through that expo, we are able to deal with a range of challenges that may pop up and be able to troubleshoot them as quickly as possible. And I think the important thing to highlight here is that we are presenting indeed the challenges, but also very precise measures in terms of how we've dealt with those. So that said, I will then ask SASA to quickly come in and start with the first few slides. As indicated, we will deal with the first seven, and then the Department of Communications, together with the agencies, will deal with the remainder of the presentation. I have shared the presentation, and I'm hoping that honorable members are now able to see it. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Good morning, honorable members. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity for us to come and present the collective work we do with SAPO, notwithstanding the challenges that we've had over the journey. Chair, I will just speak to the context within which we're operating under, and then Rapahle, my colleague responsible for strategy, will then take us through the rest of the presentation in terms of the part that is going to be covered by us. Just as a way of setting the scene, Chair, as we all know, social grant payments are regulated in terms of Regulation 21 of the Social Assistance Act of 2004. And in terms of this regulation, clients, that's what we refer to them as, they shall be paid a social grant either into a bank account of the beneficiary, if the beneficiary has one, or the payment can be done by a method that would have been decided on by the agency. And in this instance, the agency has decided on the choice, which is the post office, which has gone through a interesting journey in terms of the past 2 years that we've had this relationship. The current payment model, therefore, Chair, is that SASSA deposits the funds into the bank account of the grant recipients. So we would then deposit at every given time the money into the bank accounts. Prior to the appointment of SAPO, as some of the members that have been part of this journey for a long time would remember, is that we used to pay the social grant in cash through CPS, and the contract with CPS was terminated at the end of September in 2018 in line with the constitutional judgment. As we remember, that was a painful process that we went through, where we had to be managed not only by the constitution, but also through IMC and a whole range of other structures as an institution, which got us to this point. Guided by the Interministerial Committee on Comprehensive Social Security, we then appointed SAPO as a designated payment method in terms of Regulation 21, subsection 1B of the Social Assistance Act. The service contract includes card production, which is done through the partnership of SAPO and Postbank, electronic payments and payments at the post office branches at the cash pay points. As we may be aware, some of our clients that don't have access to infrastructure would go and get their money through the cash pay point. And we currently have 1,740 cash pay points, having moved from over 10,000 cash pay points, because now our clients are actually paid through a bank account, which means that we've moved to a digital space in terms of how they actually get paid. Can you go to the next one, DG? When the special COVID-19 grant was introduced in May, as we may remember, we went through a very difficult process whereby we actually had to re-establish a new system in terms of how to pay the clients. We found ourselves in a situation whereby most beneficiaries did not have bank accounts or could not load onto their bank accounts. And in some instances, we had challenges where we had to go through the verification process to ensure that we pay to in the right account. We then went to SAPO because we were finding ourselves not being able to do the payment, to say, in light of the fact that we already have a contract, we already have an arrangement, can you please help us in relation to ensuring that our people can get their money as quickly as they can, because that was actually quite a difficult time. In some instances, we had instances whereby clients opted to be paid through mobile payments, but again, because of the risk mitigating strategies that we had to that had to be put in place based on the requirements from National Treasury, it became very difficult for us to pay the clients through the mobile payments, and we also had to go through a protracted process in terms of getting agreements with the banks because of the requirements that actually existed. The channel that has become now a de facto main channel is actually the post office. When one looks at the number of clients, particularly that we have for the 350, whereby over 4 million clients actually get paid through the post office, and the other clients would then get paid through their bank accounts, and a few that are actually getting paid through their mobile payments, because for us to be able to pay into a mobile bank account, it therefore means that the client has to be recharged on that particular phone, as was the requirement from National Treasury for us to be able to use this particular platform. Chair, I will then hand over to Rapati to complete the rest of the part that is done by us before the post office comes through. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Rapache.
Rapate, you're still muted.
Hey. Uye, por Rapate.
CEO, let me suggest that between yourself and Diane, continue.
I will continue, Chair. She's lost the screen. She can't see the screen. Chair, as we may be aware, particularly for the committees, that we pay 18 million social grants monthly to, in terms of number of clients, to 7.3 million recipients. And on a monthly basis, the amount of money that we pay is 15 billion. 11.3 million of our clients are actually paid holistically, and 24 banks are also part of this process. So 70% of our clients are paid through Postbank. Those clients would have normally either an account which is in relation to the partnership that we have, or they would have an ordinary Postbank account. In relation to the total amount that we pay, which is 15 billion, 10 billion would be paid through Postbank, post office arrangement. And in relation to the SRD, which I indicated earlier, Chair, is that 4 million accounts are actually, of the 6 million people that we pay, 4 million people are actually paid through SAPO, again, because of the issue of that I indicated earlier. With regards to clients either not having bank accounts or the failure in terms of the validation process. The grants are therefore paid through the Postbank accounts as a banking partner of SAPO, and the beneficiaries, some of them would use the post office and others would use other parts of the national payment system to make sure that they are able to access their money. The clients that would only be paid through the post office would be those that are SRD 350 account clients, because in relation to those, we don't have any other channel that they can use other than having to go through the post office. Hence, the committee asked us to come and unpack as to how are we resolving the issues that are impacting on the queues, particularly in the post office environment, having identified the issues on our side and having unpacked those to the committee. You can go to the next one, DG. These are basically the channels that the clients would normally use. And as we can see, many of our clients actually tend to use the ATM, and that's the value that would be utilized there. And that's the monthly normal SASSA grant payments. That is excluding the 350 clients. Of the 350 clients, we've indicated that 6 million of them would normally go to the post office because they don't have other options, with the 2 million utilizing other channels. We've also indicated the breakdown in terms of the clients that use the different channels. And what's interesting is that fewer and fewer clients would actually go to the post office in terms of being able to draw their money, because now they can access all the different types of channels in terms of them being able to use their money. So the bulk would actually use the national payment system, which would include the retailers, but over and above the retailers would also include the banking infrastructure, which gives our client choice, which is what they did not have in the past. I would then, Chair, just finalize in terms of highlighting the different challenges that we've had. You can go to the next one, DG. In terms of the payment challenges that we've experienced over the past few years through this partnership, is that the collaboration was successfully implemented, and SAPO has since August 2018 been providing payment services to all social grants beneficiaries. However, a number of operational and service delivery challenges have been experienced, experienced also by portfolio committee members as they go and engage with their constituencies on the ground. And these include long queues that actually come more as a result of the 350 than it is with our normal clients, because we want to believe that those we've been able to manage and actually improved a great deal over the past few months since the beginning of COVID, because we implemented a number of programs to make it manageable in terms of managing those queues. We've also experienced a situation with the 350 in particular, whereby there's no adherence to protocols, particularly outside the post office, because inside the post office that is managed, but more in terms of where the clients are actually queuing in the different centers, because they have to queue way out of the post office to manage the protocols inside. The quality of service in relation to our normal clients has actually been a challenge in relation to pay points and in the SAPO branches, particularly because of some of the issues that clients experience, some of which would include sometimes we run out of cash and the robberies that unfortunately has continued to impact our post office branches because they've remained vulnerable in the process. I've spoken to the issue of lack of cash in some instances, and the fact that in many instances clients have to replace the card, and the issues that were raised in the media about the card replacement had to do with the fact that there was an understanding that the card was going to expire, and we then were able to communicate to our clients that it's not going to expire, but post office will speak to all the issues in terms of the plans that they have for us to be able to replace that card, which came about as a result of the forensic investigation that was done through the Reserve Bank. While significant progress, Chair and Honourable Members, has been made, some of the issues remain, but as DG said, we continue to work as a collective to make sure that we can address these using both operational structures and also having to report to the ministers on a continual basis for us to make sure that we resolve some of these issues that we have. It's not been an easy journey, Chair, but I think the commitment is there from both parties for us to make sure that we make this intergovernmental partnership actually work to ensure that as we improve the capacity of the state, we also deliver a service to our clients to make sure that we can begin to observe and make sure that the felt needs of our people are actually out there on the ground. But it is a journey that we're taking, Chair. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to the Group CEO of SAPO to continue with the plan of action for us to address these issues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Next one.
Good day, Chairperson, members, ministers, and colleagues. So we will be taking over from this part of the presentation, and also just to reaffirm that the presentation has been prepared jointly with SASA and also support together with the Post Bank. So there are challenges that were highlighted in the beginning of the presentation. So this section will be more covering the how we are mitigating against the challenges, especially with regard to the COVID-19 challenges. And for this part of the presentation, SAPO will be presented by the Acting CEO, Ms. Zukiswa Ntikeni. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson. Morning and morning to the honorable members. I will start with the long queues on the social grant payments, and the mitigation that has been done in that space is to separate the three categories of grant payments. The first one being the older pension, and they are paid on the 3rd of the month. And then the second group is paid on the 4th of the month, and this consists of the disability grant. We also have a third group. Basically, it's the children's grant that gets paid on the 5th. The split into the three categories within the social grant payment days has proved to be successful in terms of mitigating against the queues. We've also experienced that some grant beneficiaries use alternative sources to receive their grants. For instance, we've seen a decline in the number of direct deposits and payments through SACCO and Post Bank. In the main, we believe it's because of the younger category that tends to use ATMs and the retail environment. And we have encouraged the use of SASA, of the SASA SACCO card at various payment channels, so that we are able to see a reduction on the number of people that use the cash pay points as well as the branches. On COVID-19, we've actually developed a toolkit. The toolkit is in line with the COVID regulations, and we use it in all our pay points as well as branches. We've also appointed a compliance officer to make sure that this toolkit is implemented and there's adherence to it. We've also seen a bit of improvement in areas where we do not have high volumes of beneficiaries, especially in the offices and very close to the offices. However, where there's longer queues, we do make use of volunteers to mitigate. In some instances, specifically for the grant payments, we approach the municipality, especially in the Eastern Cape, where we were able to use some of their facilities. And as a result, we were able to mitigate against the long queues in King Williamstown specifically. Another intervention from SACCO is to deploy staff to start at half past six in high volume outlets. We've also received assistance from SASA by way of volunteers that help us with the long queues. And we also have a team that monitors and assess the queues from time to time. In some instances where we've got we put chairs to implement the social distancing that is required. And this has since worked accordingly. With the SRD queues, we have developed a methodology around December when we were faced with the second wave of COVID. And with the assistance of SASA, with CETA as well, we then developed a tool that is being implemented by SASA. And the tool is basically a scheduling tool where beneficiaries are directed as to where to go for payment, which is linked to the actual post office as far as possible. The tool also allows clients to go online, those that are able to do so, to indicate which branches they would like to collect their grants. So this has worked so far, and we will continue with it with the next cycle of SRD payments. It also gives clients an option to use a commercial account, so they are able to update their details and be able to access their monies from a bank account. And the encouragement is continuing with encouraging beneficiaries to change their payment method to commercial banks. We've also implemented we piloted a staggering using the three digits, which has worked well in Gauteng, the three digits of the ID number. It has worked well in Gauteng as well as in the Eastern Cape, specifically in Mthatha, Butterworth and Ayodhya. So the intention is to roll out this pattern to other provinces, which is going to happen with the next cycle. In terms of cash flow projections, that has since improved, especially because we've had about 6 months to pick up the trends in terms of what is required. And with the tool that has been introduced by SASSA, it even helps even more to make it specific as to where these grants are going to be collected. And we are able to indicate per branch how many beneficiaries we are able to help, basically because we take 2 to 3 minutes to process a transaction. And in a day, SAPO is able to cater for 130 beneficiaries. We continuously, in terms of unavailability of some post offices, this is twofold. In some areas, especially in the shopping malls, some landlords do not want to cater for SRD clients due to the nature of that clientele and the queues that come with it. So we also in constant negotiation with landlords to allow the beneficiaries to come through, as well as in some instances where we've been challenged because of cash flow situation and the office closures, we continue to engage landlords and we are issuing them with our payment plans so that we can accommodate this requirement. And the message to them is that as our financial situation improves, we are then able to pay. And so far, it's a bit slow. Some landlords are understanding, others not so understanding. The next slide is indicating an example of the SMS that is sent to beneficiaries. The one on top indicates the specific branch that the beneficiary is to go to. It also indicates the time at which the beneficiary can collect the grant. The second one illustrates just only where the post office, it just tells the person to go to the post office, and this one is mainly on a provincial kind of split. As I said earlier on, the aim is to encourage beneficiaries to continue to update their details in terms of the specific branch that they would need to attend to. In terms of other interventions that we have implemented, we've had system failures, especially last year, December, which have since been corrected. It resulted in a lot of unhappiness with beneficiaries as well as the retail sector. Some beneficiaries had to go to the retail environment and there were longer queues than what they had anticipated, which caused a lot of frustration. However, the good thing is that this problem has since been resolved, and with our partners, Post Bank, so it has since stabilized, and the ownership has been moved from SAPO to Post Bank. Currently, Post Bank is maintaining the day-to-day running of the system, and this has proven to be successful. They've done some enhancements to the system, and these enhancements have been implemented, which has led to the stability of the system. And going to the fraudulent activities with regards to the Postbank card, that's the next slide, please, Chair. That's the next slide. The card problems were experienced in the beginning of 2019, where there was a surge in the number of beneficiaries who did not receive their money. The numbers spiked between May and July, and as a result, the bank account, well, this was as a result of the bank account changes that were taking place. And the scenario stabilized around August 2019. However, we are starting to see a gradual increase again post-COVID. In the main, this is in line with generally the scenario that we see in the country, where post level one introduced in June, we saw an upsurge in the criminal space, and this has also been, it has also impacted SASA and SAPO beneficiaries in the main. The measures that we've implemented is basically to actively monitor the bank accounts, and we implement a bank account verification on a monthly basis. The post office has also implemented a card stock control to make sure that we are proactive in securing the cards. And Postbank has also concluded changes in the key management environment that led to that compromise the cards. It's been reported that by Postbank basically that since February we haven't had any further instances of fraud, especially on the cards. So no beneficiary has been impacted upon in any way as far as the cards are concerned. So that one has been successful. The next slide is showing reported losses by beneficiaries to Postbank. It's in the next slide, please. It shows reported losses against what has been reimbursed to the beneficiary. We've received 35,000 cases, and we've reimbursed 23. And just to explain the gap between the two figures, because the agreement is that when a beneficiary reports a card or tampering with the card or whatever losses would have taken place in that card, we Postbank would then process the loss and then reimburse. So the beneficiary does not have to wait for the full investigation to take place. However, there are certain forms that need to be submitted, and there's also affidavits that need to be submitted to make sure that the information is there, and then they can process the claim. But what tends to happen is that beneficiaries will not submit all the information required, or they wouldn't submit an affidavit, or they wouldn't sign an affidavit. So that would create that gap, because as they submit, we then have to return the documents to them, and they in turn would need to resubmit, and they do not always do it promptly. So sometimes we have to wait a month before the beneficiary can come back and give you the details that were requested. So that's what creates the gap between the two. Between the two cases of reported as well as the reimbursement. Moving on to the robberies, we've generally seen an increase of robberies in post offices. that have resulted in late payments due to late arrival, or the fact that when there's a robbery in a post office, we have to wait for subs and before we reopen, and sometimes we find that staff is traumatized, so we would need to close longer. But in some instances, we are able to transfer staff to that branch for it to continue paying. The risk with the cash has been exacerbated by the SRD grant clientele from around August onwards. Because of the demand of cash, branches had to hold larger cash volumes throughout the month for the first 4 to 6 days to accommodate the requirements. With the large crowds and cash holding became visible to criminals, and as a result, that's why we've been having an increase in the robberies. However, we are rolling out an electronic security system by way of cash protection devices, as well as multiple cash time delay safes. So the nice thing about these technology is that even if criminals do come through, the money gets stained, so they are unable to use it. However, this rollout has been hampered by the limited cash flow, so it has been a bit slow, because by now we would have completed all the branches. In terms of burglaries, we have increased the number of guarding services in branches with about approximately 6,800 guards, and they are manning in the main. It's our sites of 101,500, and we also have a further deployment in SRD sites where we wait high volume. So we've got a further 2,500 guards placed there. We also work closely with FAF, and we sit in the national and provincial forums that deal with day-to-day risk mitigation in terms of what happens on the ground. We've got a security and investigation team at SAPO that sits in this fora. SAPS is overstretched though, so in some instances we do have to back up our sites with a guards to mitigate against this. We also have collaborated with other crime fighting groups where we are able to then engage the CIT industry directly and see how we can mitigate against the risks we face. I just must mention that so far we've had 118 arrests by SAPS, as well as 22 staff members that have been arrested, that have been involved in such robberies. And moving on to the cash transit. The cash in transit model works on the basis that each vehicle of services approximately 30 clients in a day. And 20 minutes are allowed per transaction, with 25 minutes allowed between client addresses. But you find that any form of delay that happens within either a transaction or within the route impacts directly on the next pay point. And also it's also influenced by the geographical location. Sometimes the roads are not as good, so it comes with its own delays, and sometimes there's problems with the CIT vehicle, and it also leads to further delays. However, what we have since looked at is as a long-term solution, is that we are going to be revising, actually the current tender has looked into it already, where the contract will be different and will be dealing directly with the cash in transit company, eliminating the bank, because currently we go to the bank and then the bank would engage the cash, the CIT company to then deliver. So with us removing the bank from the equation, we'll be able to engage directly with the CIT company. And we believe that we will then be able to get a component of the dedicated vehicles to ensure operational efficiencies. And we also continue with the deployment of the cash protecting devices, as well as the multiple cash time delay phase. Lastly, moving on to the card replacement. As a result of the reports of fraud through SAPO issued cards, the consequent findings of the forensic investigation that was commissioned by SAP, Postbank was instructed on the 1st of October to take a number of measures to address and mitigate against the risk of the fraud that took place. And so far, Postbank has approached SAP to stretch the replacement of cards over an 18 to 24 month period. And the intention is to stagger the release of the cards so that we do not find ourselves with queues again with the replacement of card project. And it is clear that the deadline of March 2021 will definitely not be met. Thank you, Chair.
Anything, ministers? Do ministers want to make comments before we engage? I'm chairing. Hello?
I'm here, Chair. I thought you were talking to
Yes, I was asking if ministers want to make any comments before we engage in discussions.
No, personally, I don't, Chair. I'd rather we do so once the members have also asked their questions, because to be frank, Chairperson, as you said, this is a journey for us too at the Department of Social Development. This is a journey. There's still a lot that we need to have a conversation on our own, but let me just allow members to ask the questions.
Okay.
Not allow, sorry. Let me not say anything. I'm not the one to allow the members. It's you, Chair. I will speak later.
Okay. Honorable Minister Ndabeni. Okay. Can we proceed? Okay. Honorable members, it is on your table. Honorable Aris, Honorable Masango, Honorable Seker, Honorable Breard, Honorable Abrams, Honorable Dikhang, in that order.
Well, good morning, Chair, and good morning, Minister. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Mine is just on the slide that I indicated that all post offices are not available. I've just read this morning also an article of the post offices in Equint It's a query. What do you call it? It's a query.
Yes, a query.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for that. That the door is closed there also. And my worry is the post office must tell us what alternative, as a service provider for SASA, what alternatives do they have in place for our people, you know, to access their grants? And then Chair, there's really, because I did see they have touched on that, nearly every month, and they must also come up with a report to tell us, because nearly every month we see in the newspapers that another post office was robbed. And these robberies happen specifically during the time when the social grants need to be paid out. And it is worrisome because now even our people's lives are also in danger. And they must tell us what plans do they have in place to make sure that our people are safe, and what alternative measures did they have in place that these people that are bringing this money, this transit, what do you call it, these fidelity guards and whoever they are, companies that bring the money to the post office, what other alternative arrangements? Because now you see people are aware that at that date it is a pension, you know, that the pension will be paid out. So they must come up with other plans, you know, how to make sure that these transitor robberies and now people's lives are safe. They must also tell us how much post office was robbed, because 7.49 million grants people received their money from that, because they have indicated that they have challenges there. And then also for SASA, I want to find out from them in terms of this virtual assessments, how will it be? SASA was giving us a very nice presentation and give us again the assurance that they will be finished by this, they will meet the deadline for the temporary disability grant by the 31st of March. But Chair, let me tell you something. On Wednesday, just a Wednesday, and the end also indicates that they did put measures in place in George and Eisner, because I did bring it to the attention of this committee. And I want to thank them for that. But just Wednesday, there was a gentleman with a temporary grant that was left in December. The last time he received a grant was the 2nd of December. And you know what, Chair? His date to see a doctor is only on the 19th of May. Even worse, because he's on a temporary disability grant, in this time, his treatment date will lapse, which means that you will only see on the 19th a doctor, so he's left without money. And then, Chair, I'm really worried about the Western Cape, the assessment of the Western Cape. They need to be honest with us.
You know,
if this is the issue of the Western Cape, no way, Chair, this is the issue of the Western Cape. The 19th of May, but when they present, they come and tell us that the temporary disability grant, all the assessments will be done. Why is it that they give people the date of the 19th of May? Thank you, Chair.
Right, Honourable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Department, SASA, and the Post Office for the presentations. I just would like to know with regards to the delays that are still happening at SASA with both the grants themselves and the recently introduced pilot on the online application. When one was doing oversight visits on this issue, it appeared that the issue is that all the work that we think is online actually has to be redone on the system of SASA. And when we spoke to management, they said that the automation is the issue at SASA. This is why we have seen so much backlogs. And I would like to know what is the process that is being taken to deal with this, because the implication of these delays are so dire. And the official of the SASA would know this, because I am always in contact with them and they assist so much with the sort of queries that I bring to them, and that is the reason why people have to come through us, and then I have to keep going to SASSA, and I'm sure this is the case with other colleagues as well, is because the systems that are there to assist people are not working as optimally as they should. So I would like to know about the issue of the automation of the work of SASSA. And then, of course, I've touched on the appeals, Chair. The appeals are taking very long. It is people are thinking that SASSA has forgotten them. They think that the SRC grant will lapse in April and they will never hear from SASSA because the appeals are taking so long. And the last thing on the SASSA part is the issue of the communication that I believe needs to happen between the head office when these decisions are being taken as we go along to the client-facing the staff of SASSA at local offices, because the grant applicants come when the staff don't know that there have been changes or improvement, and they keep sending applicants away, which applicants actually do not have money to keep going back and forth to SASSA. And so I would like to ask a question from the post office. I heard that the acting CEO made a presentation on the issue of fraud, and would like to know. And I heard that there were numbers that the acting CEO actually gave of people that have been arrested. I would like to know how much is involved, how much money is involved in these fraudulent activities that are taking place, because there are people who get defrauded twice of their money. So it means that the people that are doing this are still in the system. I appreciate and welcome the fact that people are being arrested, that the law enforcement agencies are on this issue, but it is very disheartening to hear a person said the money that I had been, it had been paid back to my account after the fraudulent activity has also been fraudulently withdrawn. So I would like to know how much that money is to this minute. And then since the relaxing of the COVID-19 level 3 to level 1, I would like to know if SASSA is still working on the 50% rotational basis in terms of their staff in their offices. And then lastly, Chair, I would like to know what happens to people when they receive an SMS. They go to the post office and then they are told that there is no money, when they actually take a screen grab of that SMS that the acting CEO put on the screen earlier on, that says that your money will be there on the 5th of March 2021. Okay. And then when a person gets there, the money is not there. And lastly, Chairperson, I would like to ask that we discuss the implications of the discussions that ensued this morning about the ECD issue and the public hearings taking place, or and the education sessions that are already taking place, and the public public hearings that are scheduled for next week, please, after the meeting, if the Chair doesn't mind. Thank you so much.
Honorable Seika, can we respect time, honorable members? Honorable Seika.
Yeah, certainly, Chair. Chair, I just wanted, I came late into the meeting, but I just wanted to ask questions around the Children's Amendment Bill.
But we're not dealing with the Children's Amendment
Bill. Shall I continue?
We're not dealing with Children's Amendment Bill now, Honorable Sayers.
Chair, may I ask, in terms of if we have concerns, how do we proceed with that? Because it was my understanding that the Children's Amendment Bill would be on the table today, this morning.
No, Honorable Secretary. It was the legal opinion on the process. That was the first item. We dealt with that and finished.
So the,
can I request that after
we have questions regarding a chair, how do we proceed with that?
What we have dealt with that, we can't go back there now. You better ask, we can talk to you after the meeting if you want more clarity. Please.
Okay, Chair, I think I just want to say that there are questions that regards to that I would like to pursue.
No, you can.
Regarding the process.
Very good questions, not on this item.
Okay. Okay, then I just want to highlight in terms of SASSA, I will proceed and look for an avenue to raise those. Then in terms of SASSA, Chair, I just want to highlight the issues that we are currently experiencing on the ground that have been raised before by Honorable Aris. And that is that the issues around the queuing and people needing to be sleeping over in front of offices. In the constituency where I'm serving, those issues are still maintained. It is still the same. And there is a serious concern for us to deal with those issues as a matter of urgency, because we are having issues with safety at some of those places where people are sleeping over the day before in order for them the next day to be serviced at the SASSA offices. It is a serious issue that needs serious attention, and we cannot, I don't know how we can emphasize that this issue can potentially put serious risk to the stability of our country. Because we are having people that are suffering in our communities, and people are going to SASSA offices over and over and over again. It is a very sensitive situation that needs to be sorted, and we cannot have death by PowerPoint. We need to really see the solutions in action. And so I want to ask that the department really respond to those issues that we even as a committee are putting to them personally. That is what I would raise as Chair as a comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Comrade, all right. Honourable members, can I do this? If you listen to SAPO and SASSA intervention, these are interventions which are seeking to deal with these issues. Even the temporal disability grants, the issues that are being raised there, these are issues that are raised to deal with these issues. I would request that if we are to be an effective oversight, if I was in Katleho and I saw something, I put it on the table so that when we want to follow, we must exactly know what specific thing are we following. I would like us to do this now that there are specific interventions. We must not be general. Let's say in my area, there were so many people listening. This thing doesn't change. And then we follow up, and the department, when they come back, they must tell us what did they do about. I'm requesting that we do it that way, because these are interventions. Where they are not working, let's expose them. Let the department tell us what's happening there. Honorable Akbare Priyat.
Ja, dankie voorzitter. Chairperson, maybe let me start with SASSA as well. And I would like to agree with both Honorable Aris and Honorable Masango in terms of the SRD appeals and in terms of the temporary disability grant bookings. I've also had a number of concerns in terms of the appeals that have been taking so long at the SRD grant side, and bookings being, I had an example of April, but Honorable Aris has an example of May, and I think that's even worse. So I would just like to reiterate that as well and ask that SASSA specifically speak to that. I have to say I am looking forward to the online system, because I still feel that we have, to a large extent, too many issues at local SASSA offices. And you asked that we mention specific offices that we are having problems with. And I would like to reiterate Pretoria head or regional office, regional office rather, and that I would like to specifically mention here. I had a number of an elderly gentleman and a group of six people receiving some for old age grants that went there last week Wednesday. They went there last week Monday when it was the old person's day. They got their forms to actually shift to banking details. They were given the forms by the SASSA officers and they were not informed that Mondays are days for older persons. They went back on the Wednesday to actually go and hand in their forms. And even though the man working at SASSA inside, one of the officials, said they are willing to stand in the queue, the security guard actually chased them away and said that they are not allowed to stand in the queue because this is a day for child grants and they should come back on Monday. And
Chairperson, where was this happening, Honourable Member?
In Pretoria, Chairperson, at the regional office in Pretoria.
Can we send the specific details of that to the department?
I will do that, Chairperson. And and they were queuing there since 4 o'clock in the morning. And so I really think that is a big issue. And then to get to SASSA, SAPU, Chairperson, specific issues. Nigel Police Post Office, sorry. They have limited personnel working at the queues and there are people actually queuing for 3 blocks down the line. Our councillor in Ekurhuleni phones the Metro Police and Metro Police every now and again tries to check up, tries to contain and maintain social distancing there. But alas, they do it, they implement it, and after they've gone, people just jam up again because they are so scared that other people are going to actually, you know, enter the line in front of them. So that is a specific one. Also in terms of Atelier, now I can't remember exactly where it was. I'll just go check my notes, Chairperson, where there's one teller at a post office that has 5 or 6 tellers or spaces for tellers, and then everybody, the car licenses, 350 Rand grant, SRD grant, all go to this one queue. And they actually have to queue outside in the sun. And it really gets quite hot in the Free State, especially during January and February. I will just confirm that and send it through to Lindiwe. And then, Chairperson, in terms of Newcastle, I have a specific worry there as well. In terms of the post offices, there were 4 post offices. One closed down. And the other 3 post offices have intermittently for the past 2 months had challenges in terms of electricity. The one post office, I have the details that I'll send through, has not had electricity for 3 weeks. A second one has not had electricity for 1 week due to outstanding electricity accounts that have not been paid, which are forcing all of the people to the one post office in Newcastle that is intermittently having electricity. And I do not feel that is right. And I think that SAPU, I heard the ideas, but I'm not convinced that the way they are going to address these issues is going to be sufficient to actually see these queues being shortened, to see social distancing being implemented, and really seeing services getting to our people. Chairperson, but those are just my comments and observations. I would leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, Akhbare Brett. I'll repeat this, Honourable Member. I think as we go forward in this committee, if we really want to confront these things practically, I want Lindiwe and other people to make sure that if you say in your constituency, Sunward Park, 21st, Senate Street, put it here so that even in the portfolio committee, they record those things so that the department on an ongoing basis is assisted to respond to specific things. I'm saying to you, comrades, honorable members, for instance, Post Office and SASSA, they have listed the challenges they are dealing with, long queues at SAPO branches, lack of adherence to COVID-19 protocols, quality of service to beneficiaries at pay points and SAPO branches, fraudulent activities relating to SAPO post bank card properties, the lack of availability of sufficient cash, addition, replacement of SASSA SAPO cards, forensic investigation on fraud using SASSA SAPO cards. But when we deal with these issues, if we experience them, for our oversight to be productive, let's learn to record the things we interface with, so that we are able in the next meeting to say, Minister and your team, these are the specific things. What has happened to that? This is my strongest appeal now.
right? Honorable Alexander.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Firstly, my question for the TDG. I'm looking at the national summary, and it still seems that the Western Cape, you know, has a significant less capacity than all the other provinces, and so they have a capacity problem. My question then is, for provinces who are look like they're meeting their targets, for example, the Free State, would they then have capacity once they've finished with their targets to then assist the Western Cape, for example, with the telephone assessments and the telephone bookings? Are these medical assessment files transferable electronically? So would other provinces be able to step in and give that assistance to the Western Cape? Furthermore, on the issue of additional facilities, and I note that the presentation says that it's got to do with OHS, but I would like to know, does SASSA have the sufficient staffing to actually go and occupy these additional facilities once, you know, the OHS protocols have been implemented? Is there enough staff to occupy these additional facilities? And that brings me to my next question, in general to SASSA. You know, I'd like to know if you can maybe elaborate more on your engagement with the labor unions, because I know some unions are informing their officials not to work. And there's been an example of that in the Eden district, where communities were waiting for SASSA to come to the community hall, the times were posted, and then SASSA officials did not rock up. Then on the issue of the post office, I'd just like to find out, and here's an example, I've got a report that in Humankraal, they in Northwest, they are also there are challenges with shortage of staff and long queues. And I'd like to know if that post office there can please be targeted to start and open at 6:30, because currently they are opening up 9:00, and you know, starting at 6:30 would maybe assist that post office and the clients there. And then also, just on slide 13, I think that's a typo, but the acting CEO mentioned 130 clients a day, and the slide referenced 130,000 clients a day. So I just want confirmation that it is 130 clients a day. And then also, I would also like to know, you know, what is the total amount lost due to these ongoing robberies? And if it's SAPA that is liable for this cash, or if it's SASSA, and also have SAPA engaged with our South African police services to on this, you know, if it's not a syndicate or if it's isolated incidents, if it's related. And then, you know, lastly, Chairperson, we've seen a steady decline in the number of post offices available in South Africa, and we know this is going to affect service delivery. We've also heard from the acting CEO that, you know, they have a financial problem. You know, they can't pay their rent, there's backlogs, there's broken ICT, and also there's reports that the post office, you know, will soon be bankrupt. And I just want to find out from SAPO, you know, this relationship with SASSA going forward, will SAPO still be able to continue given the capacity concerns in the future? Is this relationship still a viable option for them? Thank you, Chairperson.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Abrams. After you is Meneer Stock.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues in welcoming the presentations which were done by the department, SASSA and SAPO. In terms of the TDG's update and how the our department and SASSA, they are going to deal with the challenges that are confronting SASSA. I would actually like to appreciate the fact that the 10-point plan which they are presenting to us is quite it's quite clear in terms of what the problems are and then which solutions they are bringing forward or which solutions they are proposing to deal with that particular problem. So in terms of my considered view, Honorable Chairperson, I'm of the view that this particular 10-point plan presented to us by SASSA and the department, it will continue to be a living document. in that if the problems are still persisting or the solutions that has been proposed, it will continue to be, they will always continue to look for an alternative in terms of dealing with the problems that are there. But I also appreciate the fact that in the 10-point plan, they are not shying actually away to diagnose the problem and then to come up with a solution. That's what actually impressed me. I just wanted to make that comment in regard to that. And then the second issue, Honorable Chairperson, as it relates to the presentation by SASSA and SAPO, we actually welcome the mitigating strategies and the interventions that have been implemented by the department, SASSA and SAPO. However, the situation remains the same, and I think I would like to make this point and make a particular emphasis on it, that the lines are still long in the cold, and many honorable members and my colleagues, we keep on hammering on this point, making it all the time. And I hope the leadership at this particular institution, SASSA department, will be able to hear us loudly, because these are the issues that we are confronting on a daily basis in our different constituencies. There's no social distancing, the monies are running out, and all of that, all the issues that other honorable members have raised. We can't on an annual basis be discussing the same problems where there's a need to be practical change. There is a need for us to be able to say, this is how we're going to be able to deal with the problem. Honestly speaking, Honorable Chairperson, maybe the department or SASSA will have to tell us exactly what are the persistent root of problems that are confronting SASSA, so that SASSA is also better positioned to be able to speedily address the problems that are confronting them. And then also, how has the department and SASSA practically applied the theory of change on these persistent challenges, and what have been the outcomes thereof in dealing with the problem? And then my second question, Honorable Chair, which will be the last one, the ANC has consistently called for the dignity to underpin the services that are delivered by SASSA and SAPO. So we continue to notice the challenge of these spaces, which are not being conducive for the elderly. There are no chairs. The people there are waiting in the sun and then outside the gates of SASSA and all of that. All the problems that have actually been highlighted. And then also the ablution facilities. I think some of my colleagues have also raised and belabored this point. And then I would like to find out, Honorable Chair, as my last point, how many of these offices throughout the country, or maybe in the different provinces or either the districts, still don't have these facilities that I've actually highlighted earlier on? And then also, can we all have a practical timeline as to when these facilities will be installed at the various offices throughout the country? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. After you is Akbar Opperman.
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions regarding TDG is, I want to know regarding assessment sites in the Northern Cape. We have to travel vast distances just to access a health facility, and then you need to pay transport for that. So I want to know what assistance are given to people living with disabilities who live on rural farms. Because in the town I'm living in Louisfontein, more than 7 people missed the opportunity to see the SASSA doctor in December because they have to travel and they have to pay for that transport. And how do you pay when you yourself have not received your grants since the 2nd of December? And then I'd like to know regarding the SRD 500 Rand given to recipients whose TDG have lapsed. I want to know, have all recipients received the SRD money for the past 2 months? And if not, why not? And then regarding SAPO on slide 6 of the presentation, I'd like to know, can we not champion for exemption of bank costs on the SASSA grant payment specifically? If we take a look at Standard Bank, we only have a Standard Bank in Louisfontein. So each SASSA recipient must pay 30 rand of bank cost on that money. And millions of recipients equals millions of bank costs of the accounts of the most vulnerable in our country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. According to my chat, we are done. Am I leaving anyone out?
Honorable members, my chat is clean, going.
Gone.
Gone. Honorable ministers, your team response, and we close.
Thank you, Chairperson. The DG must direct who must start in response. And guys, can you please try and be quick in your responses, but also don't lose any facts that are requested by the members.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I will ask that honorable ministers, that we start with the responses specifically on the post office, and we conclude with the responses from SASA, and then I would just say 2 points and then give back to the ministers in that regard. So if the post office could kindly go first, please, and my colleagues from communications, and then SASA. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the Honourable Chair and also to the Honourable Members. My name is Loretta Jordan Gianni, the Acting DG at the Department. Mine is just to say to the Honourable Members and also what Honourable Chair said, that in order for us to ensure that we respond expeditiously and ensure service delivery to our people, we would provide, which has been the case, we provide the contact details of my office as well as our parliamentary liaison officer to be able to escalate these matters and ensure that the post office responds to them within a 48-hour turnaround period. So that would be our commitment that we would put forward on the chairs, because I think going forward, there may be other matters or also challenges that will arise. So that would then be the proposal. I would like to hand over to the acting CEO as well as the COO to then respond to the specific issues that have been raised. Thank you.
What has happened? We're in your hands, guys.
Thank you, Chair. With regard, maybe I just want to also to give a bit of a context to say when SAPO took over the payment of social grants in the late 2018, this has been also a learning curve for us. As members would recall, that this came more as an intervention with what happened with the previous provider. And as a result, it has been a learning curve in terms of us as we're experiencing challenges and then resolving them as we go. And with the payments of the grants, like the normal grants, we have seen significant improvements. And the challenges currently actually more linked to the COVID-19 with regard to the questions that members have asked. And that as well as the different levels of the lockdown regulations were relaxed, then we experienced that there has been a challenge with different members of the communities also battling to deal with the social distancing. And as indicated, within the post office itself, we managed to manage the social distancing. But then through the collaborative work that we're doing with SASA and also with assistance from the shareholders, we have put the interventions that Ms. Nzigeni has spoken to, and then I will ask her just to reflect on the specifics. And then with regard to the questions that were asked about specific post offices in the different regions, we would like to get those specifics so that we can respond to the specifics that have been asked about. Thank you, members, and I'll allow Ms. Nzigeni just to speak to the specific. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
So on the first question regarding alternatives to post offices that are not available, we've indicated that the alternatives that are there would be a retail merchant, ATMs, and sometimes actually our staff even drive beneficiaries to the nearest ATM. And as well as sometimes we do have post offices that are closer that are then able to accommodate the beneficiaries. And in some instances, there's proactive communication to beneficiaries that a certain branches are closed. And where it is closed, there is a sign that is left outside to indicate what would be the alternative to that particular post office that would have been closed. And then with regard to the robberies and mitigation, we did indicate that where there we've had to increase the guards that we have. We've deployed 6,800 for branches, and for the SRD sites that have high volumes, we've put 2,500 guards there. And we've also mentioned that we've got cash protection devices that have been installed in some of the high volume branches, because that's how we prioritized it, as well as the multiple safes that are there for high volume branches. And I did indicate that this type of installation should have been completed by now, but due to the cash flow, we've had to slow down on it. And going forward, it's one of our priority areas that we are dealing with. Because what we've seen is that in an area where there are these devices, there's no interest to actually break in. Because even if sometimes they would hijack the staff members to open the safe, it's a time delay safe. So you can't open it outside a certain parameter, like working hours, or just an hour before working hours. So that's what prevents that. It stains the money. There's a question about the reported losses. In terms of the burglaries, we recorded a 16 million rand loss, and this is covered by our insurance from SAPO side. And from the robbery side, it's up to 68 million that we lost in terms of robbery. And the cash availability, yes, cash availability was a big problem when we started, simply because we didn't know where beneficiaries were going to go. But that has since subsided, because we now have trends for the past 6 months. So basically, we are able to project what the cash issues are. But there will be those isolated incidences where find that a branch would run out of cash because of what I mentioned earlier. CIT company arrives late, or there's a breakdown in that CIT vehicle. And so those are the day-to-day challenges that we deal with. So that then creates a situation where money is not there timelessly. But we are in constant engagement with our CIT companies to try and close this gap. And as I indicated, is that for the next contract, what we are looking at is to deal with the CIT company directly so that we get a sense of distribution in terms of the vehicles. Because currently, they service other clients, and we are just part of the route that they use. About 30 clients is serviced by one car. So you find that it's not always practical that cash will be there at 9 o'clock in the morning. But where we have these devices, protection devices, we are then able to get money for time before we need it, so that we mitigate against this risk. There was mention of Free State branch. Yeah, that one would have to get the specific, because there's a clear instruction and to branches that you've got separate queues. The one is for normal services, and the other one is for payment of SRD clients in any branch. So where that does not happen, we do need to be advised, and we
take action where we know that staff is not carrying out what they need to. We've got monthly tips where we remind staff constantly of what has to happen with the SRT payments. So that should not be happening. And where it does happen, and it ceases to happen. And then there's mention of post offices that have been closed due to electricity. It's a reality. It does happen. And we are trying to get into payment plans even with municipalities where we find out that this has happened. And in some instances, the municipalities are just not cooperating, or it's the landlord that's not cooperating. So in such instances, we look at an alternative venue that is close to that. And if there's none, then we do prioritize those branches so that we continue the service. Then there was a question about the number of clients who service a day. Yes, it was an error on my side. It's 130,000 clients that we are able to service in a day. And I just want to contextualize this, because in terms of the normal grant clientele, we are looking at just under 600,000. So the capacity is there to be able to handle those. It's a slightly different scenario when we look at the SRT clients. However, to mitigate against the queues, I've mentioned that we piloted a process in Gauteng, as well as in the Eastern Cape, where we use the last three digits of the ID number. And then we schedule that those will come on day one. It's probably 0081, and 088 comes on Tuesday. But usually we use two sets of those ID numbers to allow space. And this is informed by the capacity of that particular post office, because we know we've got capacity of each post office. We know how many people are able to service. Because I mentioned that we take 2 to 3 minutes to process a transaction. And then we use the number of hours in a day to determine, and then multiply by the number of tellers. Then we are able to come to a figure of how many people that post office is able to service. Just another thing, that a post office does not close when there's beneficiaries outside. So they finish them for as long as they have money. They make sure that they go to overtime to make sure that the line of clients are paid. The relationship is still solid. I think maybe this one I can leave to the CEO to respond, but it's still a solid relationship. There's nothing that is not happening in terms of grant payments. We are still paying them, and we will continue to do so. The dignity services, there was a question around the dignity services stating that in some of our facilities we do not have ablution facilities and so on and so on. So this is where we service providers to mitigate against those areas where we do not have ablution facilities. So that's where it comes through. But I know that there has been instances where the Eastern Cape and KZN where we couldn't bring through dignity services, but that has since been addressed. And we've also gone out on tender so that we can see if we can get a cheaper service provider to make sure that we are able to fully service the area. And in terms of the costs, there was a question about the costs. The transactions, for instance, the first transaction of a social grant payment is free. And the SRD also, they don't pay anything. It's SASA that pays for those transactions. So the beneficiary doesn't pay. That's all I have from my side.
Okay, Chair, I think we'll go to SASA now.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I will ask Mr. Mahlangu later on to respond to the virtual assessments as to how they actually work at a technical level. The question asked by Honorable Masango about the process, the online application process not being optimal. Yes, I do agree, ma'am. Hence, we've changed the process to ensure that the processing of the application does not actually happen at local office level, because they already have quite a number of clients they deal with. We have since removed it from the local office to ensure that it goes to either the districts or the region, so that the back office can actually sit elsewhere. So we have recognized the fact that it's not working according to how it should be working, because it should be faster even than the client that actually comes in. So we have noted it, ma'am, and we've changed the process. On the issue of the SRD appeals, yes, the process we had quite a huge backlog, but Diane will talk to how many of the clients we've already paid that have done the appeals, because the process has extensively improved with us putting in place the call center and making sure that those people can help with the backlog in terms of all the clients that we had to process. Do we have the staff to be able to manage the service centers? Yes, the staff would be available. It's just that we did have challenges, particularly in Western Cape and in Gauteng with the labor unions. And we've been having consistent engagements to highlight the fact that even at level three, the 50% was in relation to a particular area, which is basically in an office. That doesn't mean that the staff should not go and work in any other environment where they actually get deployed. On the issue of assessment sites in the Northern Cape in rural areas, Tosana is here, but we can also respond to member Opperman in terms of what the plans are to make sure that we actually bring the service closer to the people. Diane will talk to the SRD in terms of the number of applications that we've approved in relation to that, but also to the appeals. And if there's any other question that we've left out, we will definitely be able to respond to it physically. And on the document as a follow-up. Thank you, Chair Diane.
Thank you so much, CEO, and thank you, Honorable Chair and members. The issue around the appeals for the 350 grant, to date, we've paid out more. We've processed and paid approximately 97% of the appeals that have been received for the period from May to October. However, the appeals for the period from November to January, those are still in process, and the reason they haven't been processed is because we had to wait for the closing period for those appeals, which was the 28th of February. So we're only now able to start working on them, because you can't, the way the system is configured is that you don't start working on them until you have received all of the appeals for a specific period. The appeals that are received for applications that are declined for the extended period from January to April would only be dealt with after the 15th of May, which would be the closing period for those appeals to be received. So just to give clarity around that. But certainly 97% of them have been finalized. And then just on the other question that came to me, which was around the social relief for people who are still waiting for the assessments, it is one of the things we are concerned about. As I said in the presentation, there are approximately 7,900 which have already been done. It is not nearly enough, and it is something that we're currently following up with the provinces to find out why the applications are actually not coming in and why they're not being processed in time, because we should not be having our clients sitting for so long without any form of support. So this is something that we are following up. Thank you so much, Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. I think we've responded to all the issues as raised by ourselves. And indeed, we appreciate the inputs and questions raised by members. I want to just indicate that indeed
This, particularly in terms of the 10-point plan, will be a living document that we continue to work on. And I just wanted to indicate that indeed our communications machinery does need a bit of work so that we ensure that all our clients are adequately engaged with on a regular basis. And this in mind, our goal is to ensure that we provide dignity to all our clients and indeed improve the customer experience so that they can trust and also have confidence in our systems. And the plans that we've put together are aimed at that. And we will ensure that we continue working full force to ensure that we meet this goal of ours, which is actually something that we ought to be doing as both the departments and the agencies, so that we ensure that our clients have the best customer service in that regard. So, Chair, with that in mind, I'd like to hand over back to yourselves and I think perhaps possibly the ministers. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sorry, DG, before you hand over, DG, there is one question which is not through your chair for Northern Cape. I don't know whether I could actually respond to it, which was raised by Honorable Member Opperman. It's about in villages in Northern Cape where, in a case where there is a client who cannot actually come to the assessment site due to his condition, then what then we do as SASA? That's what I wanted to try to respond to that, DG, if you allow me.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. CEO, if you're able to quickly respond to that one.
Okay, I'm responding. My name is Mohudu Susari from the Northern Cape side. I make this RM there. So normally what we do through you, Chair, is that we use the normal process, even in the normal grant administration or the grants, we do have such cases. So we do have registers in each and every local office where we put aside people that need to be visited home so that we can actually be able to do arrangement with doctors to visit the homes of all people that cannot actually be coming to the site, assessment site. So it's a normal process and we have a separate register per local office and per region so that we can be able to assist such what you call clients. We do receive them time and again. Yes, it might have been maybe the member was not actually aware. Normally, a family member will come to SASA's office to indicate that there is a person that cannot come due to the condition. Then we record such a person in a register for home visit. That's where the doctors will then be referred. After they are done with the assessment on the site, then they know that they still have to do some home visit. So it's a normal process that we do, but even across the country, that's what we do. Thank you so much, Chair.
Yes. About party, so I call in the government.
Yes, Chairperson. Yes. Can I was just trying to fix my battery is low. Yes, Chairperson. I hope Minister is still here. On my side, Chairperson, I wish to thank the presenters and their presentations and all, obviously. But I also want to thank the members for their consistency in terms of bringing issues to us through the portfolio committee. But I would like to also request, Chair, that the department as well as the post office must be able to enable the members of parliament when they are doing their oversight to know who to call and where. So that issues that can be dealt actually on the date, on the time when members are being either called or members are physically in a place, they can be able to be resolved immediately. Because, Chair, my phone number, for instance, is everywhere. People call me, people send me SMSs, the department will tell you, SASA will tell you. Sometimes I might be an irritation because every time I get an SMS, I send it over. Every time I get an email, I send it over. And I demand that they must respond to those. And I think so far, to what I send to them, normally I get responses, but it's still not adequate. That's the first thing that I'm proposing, that the department must enable members to call whoever needs to be called or send a WhatsApp message and so forth. That's my first issue. The second issue, Chairperson, for me is at all times I am trying to get the department to appreciate, the department and the agencies to appreciate what actually underpins our work. What underpins our work is not what we think, what we want. What underpins our work is the responses and the systems that we put in place in order for us to be able to respond to the people adequately, and the issues of dignity, queues and all that is something that we should at all times be consistent of. The third issue that I want to say, Chairperson, is that it's clear that between myself and the Minister, Minister Stella Ndabeni-Abrahams, there's quite a number of things that we still need to really get the officials to dig deeper into. It's good for us to make the presentations that we've made here. As I said earlier on, we listen to them and then we ask them to go back because we're not satisfied with one thing or the other. But when you look at the presentations and even the plans that are upcoming, it's clear that the agreements that exist between SAPA and SAPO, and the contracts also that are, that exist between them, the service level agreement that exists with them, still has to show us how are all those agreements going to make the necessary change that needs to be changed, so that when members of parliament are here, we would focus more on policy issues, focus more on where things need to be changed from that point of view. But also, what are we going to do, in my view, in ensuring that we do some business re-engineering in a way? Because I also think that the challenges that we faced because of COVID-19 has really turned a lot of things upside down. We don't have full complement in their offices and so forth. What business re-engineering do we need, being informed firstly by what we see on the ground, not only what the members are saying themselves, but what we ourselves also see, myself and the Minister Stella Ndabeni, who from time to time we have to find ourselves on the ground to go and check or do an oversight, if I can call it that. The third issue for me, connected to everything that I'm saying here, Chairperson and honorable members, is that we need to look at a future payment model, a payment model that will assist us remove all this stress and strain, but more than anything else, remove the fact that people have to go and sleep out there in the queues, remove the fact that there are sources who also go in there and start telling them, give me 50 rands, then I'm going to stand in the queue for you. And my view is that the business re-engineering plus the future payment model must also in itself include how can we be able to know what is happening at which pay point at all times. Because it can be nice for us to say, yeah, we know this is what is happening. The members tell us and they say, I was in a place so and so, what I saw there, this is the reality of the situation, the queues are there. People go there many a times, they come today, they are told to go back and told to go back again. Minister Stella Ndabeni-Abrahams and myself will have to demand that the structures that are there must present to us a new way of doing the work that we are doing. And lastly, Chair, with all that having been said and done, we also have to be confronted, by the way, with the budget cuts that are going to take us from now until 2024. That also has an implication on us. And so we are going to be demanding that we be told, how are we going to be able to do all this and then come back to the portfolio committee? Because the aim of coming back to the portfolio committee is to account, obviously. The aim is to enable the members of parliament to do their oversight. But also the aim is also to get us as administration, a department, ministry, to be frank and open with you with some of the challenges that we are going to face. That way, it removes a stress and strain when we are having meetings, when we understand each other, and we've been able to be frank and honest with you members, the challenges that we are facing. Those would be my remarks, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Magewa. Honorable Ndabeni.
Thank you so much, Comrade Chairperson. Just to add to what Honorable Chairperson, I did say, didn't say Comrade. Just to add to what Honorable Minister Zulu has said, the need to strengthen the ties on the plans that we get to be presented with by our officials. And of course, there is nothing better than going there where the work happens. And as a result of this, from our side as the department, we have taken it upon ourselves. We have engaged with the PECs, the executive, the provincial executive committees. In the provinces, we are left with KZN, Northern Cape, and Western Cape now. We've spoken to others in order to say, how do you try to find each other? By enabling an environment to say, at the local sphere, there's a council. And therefore, how do we build those relations? Because the beneficiaries that we're talking about, they reside at a ward level, where it's a municipal demarcated area, and the traditional leadership, we have had engagements also with the House of Traditional Leaders. Hence, even in the Eastern Cape already, Honorable Chair, if you look into the Lusikisik or the Nosa area, there's a clear way of accessing grants. It has been off to Port St. John's, wherein they rotate because of this influx. They now agree to say, this is the list of the beneficiaries from SASA, and therefore this ward today will take so many, and then the councillors get to coordinate that. So we continue to bring more stakeholders that can also help us, because as much as we'd want to visit each and every post office when this work happens, it is that there's lots of areas that we would have to cover. But in the meantime, we do appreciate the DDM that government has put on place, which is why we continue after the provincial executive meeting. We meet then with the districts, of which that has been delayed by the meetings with the provincial leadership, because we didn't want the provincial leadership in government in the provinces seeing us just engaging with their districts. This, as I said, Chairperson, seeks to enhance the efforts that are being done by the officials, but there's a need to tighten, as Minister Zulu has said. All of this, honorable members, again, talks to the importance of the information when we talk to the beneficiaries or whoever that has access to a beneficiary. In terms of the messaging that post office was talking about, to say, if you have not received a message that says go at this time, please do not go. And you find that when you go there, people do not even have the SMS. But again, I blame us for not being very radical or robust in terms of raising that awareness, that these are the implications if you find yourself just at the post office without getting the message. But at the center of that are the immediate challenges that post offices face with in relation to the cash flows, which is something, again, we're throwing back to government, because there's certain things that we can do and things that we can't do, which is why we continue to engage with National Treasury to understand that this project is a very sensitive project that's looking as you said, Honorable Chair, earlier on, that this would be the best Christmas for our beneficiaries. So anything that threatens that, it therefore threatens that we do as government. So we are trying to bring on board everybody so that we can really improve and be a kind of government that can be responsive to everything and realize that we talk about of building a capable state in the reality, whilst appreciative of the competition that you are faced with and other challenges. Thank you so much, Chairperson and Honourable Minister.
Let me take this opportunity to thank the departments, the owner, right, the Department of Communication, to respond to our call and the seeming joint intention to work together and the collaboration without which you are not going to deliver any of these things. And I want to repeat that if this thing can be done properly, it will actually be a special Christmas for our people. But my discomfort to both ministers on this is that I feel positive. I can see clear interventions. But across all interventions, what is there, as I would say, there's an area of intervention. There's a manner in which intervention is made. There's a progress. There's this pervasive weakness of, and I want to say this, if we say, for instance, unavailability of sufficient cash, it means that that availability is characterized currently in a particular way. It means we are saying our end state is this. By December, we will have achieved it. By March next year, we will have achieved it. These are the critical missing things in this beautiful world. That when you say unavailable cash, how is it characterized? Are you saying maybe when if you end up failing to, you've got excess of five people and the cash goes is finished, five people are still outstanding. Are you saying in December, no more, no, not a single person will go to our centers and not get paid? When is that going to happen? You might be saying now, for every point where we are paying people, we are always having 10, an average of 50 outstanding people because the money is not available. That would have been a concrete definition of the problem. And you would be saying, then in 6 months' time, none of these people will still be outstanding, or they will be less by 40. If you say long queues, in each given area, what do we mean by a long queue? What, if we say a queue is long, what do we mean by that? And if you want to clear that, what queue are you committing to? When will that queue you're committing to be realized? Until our plans have got those characteristics, they still have a challenge in my view. But there's a positive work that is being done, but it can be undermined by the absence of those characteristics. And I'll take a risk, Pondogas, to just, anyway, I didn't even request her to make her, to use her as an example. I hope it will not cause any problem. For instance, Uzugiswa, the one who is here, can tell you, Honorable Minister, there's a moment in Ekurhuleni we were able to digitize communication with the customers throughout the city, where in my office as a mayor and in the office of each MMC, you were able to press your dashboard and go to any ward. You would be able to know the percentage queries, the rate of resolution. You would color code where these problems are resolved. The color where areas are resolved, I will not explain here because another party will misunderstand it. I'm not going to tell you that color. Where problems are resolved, that color would emerge in the screen. You would go to that area, the mood of the people would exactly reconcile with the color. And that was done digitally. There's a point where you would have a mass meeting. In that mass meeting, we had digital boards. Even if the meeting is in Kempton Park, we had applications for a number of customers. And in that application, people were able to link up with the mass meeting they're not attending, send their queries, and they are reflecting off the board, and they are being answered. I'm saying these things are doable. I see good work being done, but unless certain characteristics that I've actually requested are part of that, this good work can be undermined very easily. And I also want to say to one of the members who I want to thank always for their vibrant participation, that as we move ahead, let's be specific about the issues that we are concerned about. And I want to make sure that it's a culture in my team, the technical team, that when each member you are raising a specific issue, there must be a way in which it is recorded, sent to the department. At least start here in the committee. When we meet the department, we reflect on the rate of resolution of issues. I think that's the best way to part short. Otherwise, this cooperation will take us a long way it will actually be the greatest gift to our people, as I've said. I keep on repeating this. And I must thank both ministers and their team for that cooperation. Lindwe?
Chairperson?
Anything else?
Yeah, Chairperson, I think it's internal business. The announcement I want to make to the committee regarding the public
hearing. At that point, Umageba, no, Honorable Ndabe, import. You are released.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Probably before I exit, just to clarify one thing on the issue of the cash, in terms of running out of it and all that. It's not the SASSA cash that we, or the beneficiaries' money that we're talking about, but if the number, as Uzuki is always explaining, that as we agreed, we are able to take 130,000 people. Now, if there are more than 130,000 people, it becomes a challenge because the money we get to order on time based on the numbers that we have capacity on. But again, at the center is what I spoke about, that communication that we need to enhance. But once we enhance that communication, people will therefore know about these challenges.
Yeah, no, just using it as an example. It applies across other problem situations. But I must thank you, ministers. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Lindiwe, ngena nento zakho zasemzini.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. I would want to report or inform the committee regarding the public hearings that are scheduled for next week. Chairperson, I think I informed you yesterday that we received a communication from the Office of the Chief Whip to inform the committee that the dates of the 9th, the 10th, and the 19th of March has not been approved. So the committee must consider revisiting its program to schedule the public hearings at another date. So I just wanted to inform you about that, because the reason for this approval is because she indicated that there's a three-line whip on those dates. Thank you very much, Chair.
I hope I'll be representing members if I'm saying, can you guys come with an amended program which will be approved by Parliament, but within the deadlines of the processing of the bill? Is that doable?
Yes, Chair, we can present maybe next week a work plan.
Even if it means some sacrifices being made by the committee, I will strongly request that. Honorable members, am I representing you all?
It's Bridget.
Yes?
You are representing.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Yes, Bridget?
Yes, sir. You are representing us. And it actually also helps in that I had not received any invitation to the public hearing, so that postponement is really helping. But I wonder if it is helping the people up there who also were thinking that there would be public hearing.
That's a big challenge, yeah.
And also, Chair, I just want to ask. I don't know if one can ask this of you, that the removal of the ECD sections of the bill this morning, I would like, because the the legal opinion that we got is very general on what should be removed. And as I mentioned earlier on, and the chair responded to me, I would like that we have that in the legal opinion itself, because we have exactly three chapters that have to do with ECD. You did explain to me that it's the ones that have to do with SAGA, but what is happening is that one was reading those chapters with what the state law advisor had written as well, and how they were quite concerned about the chapters that have to do with the migration of ECD from DBE from DSD to DBE. So one would want to see that on the actual legal opinion, so that the decisions that we made at the committee this morning is reflected somewhere in writing. Because right now I'm not convinced that we are represented well in the way that the issue was decided this morning. While one is very comfortable that the process will continue, but one would also like to have something in writing that we as the committee have agreed to in this regard. And also the public hearings education sessions are ongoing as we speak, and they are speaking to the ECD issue as well. So one, I believe that as the committee, we need to look at the broader implications of the decision that was made this morning and incorporate it in everything that we are doing going forward, so that we are not found to have done something that is irregular or something that will come back to bite us in the future. That is my request, Chair. And I do agree that you're representing us as far as the postponement is concerned. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think the point you are raising, Honorable Masango, in order. Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't Jenana here?
Eh?
Is Mchengane here?
No, I don't think so, Chair.
Mchotisa is gone.
Upumile Chair Mchotisa. I can get him back.
No. What I'm saying, ADG, the resolution we have taken here, Lindiwe,
yes, Chair?
It must be couched in a written manner, like the way Honorable Masango is saying, so that it's clear we don't change the goalpost. When we say we remove, what exactly are we removing? And it must be in writing as a resolution of the committee. It was articulated here, but I think what Honorable Masango is saying is that it must be in writing. I expect it to be like that in our minutes. Is that okay?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you. I hope that addresses your concern, Honorable Masango, which must be our concern for all of us.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, somebody else?
Yes, it's me. Sorry, Chair. My humble apologies. Chair, you know what? I was just getting a call from Mossel Bay. And Mossel Bay, there is no assessment doctor. So if the department is still here, they must please attend to that. Thanks.
Okay. You are at work, whatever it is.
Always. We make it real.
Yes, baby bird, man.
I'm addressing you, Chair, not the department. If we ask question that seek clarity on issue, department must bear with us, because it's our role and it's our job to always inform them when we are not happy with things that we are seeing on the ground. That's why I was saying in the morning, you are not representing us, but now when Honorable Masango was asking, now you are representing us. Thank you.
What did I do in the morning? So that I don't repeat it.
Chair, we must be given an ample time to ask these people, because we are not meeting. I deliberately not raise their hands, because what you were saying, that when people speak and you cut them without getting the gist. So
but
I said,
my apology. I didn't cut anyone, but I was saying, please watch the time. There's no one I cut. I didn't cut anyone. But I was warning people, time matters, by the way. But I didn't cut anyone. I'm sure it's important to be worried about that, but I didn't cut somebody.
But I'm raising this, and anyway, as you have apologized, even although you don't know what you are apologizing for, I'm withdrawing what I have said.
I even asked at the end, Reverend Members, are there people who want to speak who are not even on the chat?
I didn't speak based on what I'm saying, Chair.
Mm.
Yes, I didn't want to speak. I did have questions. I didn't want to speak. You remember it's me who said I wanted to this issue to go upward so that we must contribute. We must have time. When it comes to them, we don't have time already because we have exhausted times with other issues that we are doing follow-up. The legal advisors or the legal team, they should have crafted the issue nice and clear where a layman in the street supposed to understand what they were trying to say when they verbatim when they speak to us.
Are you done, Honorable Mangaye? Honorable Mangaye?
I'm done.
Are you done?
No, friend, I'm done.
Honourable Members, can I thank all of you at that point and adjourn the meeting? Thank you very much. Are you just disappearing like that?
Thank you, Chair.
Sure. I'm Kwatile. Thank you,
Chair.
Nice
weekend.
Thank you, Chair. Have a nice day. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.